Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to begin. This is called The Only Relief, Actions of Abstinence. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous 52nd birthday party. My name is Greg, and I am a compulsive overeater and your moderator for today's panel. Let us begin with the serenity prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. First, are there any newcomers or members in their first 30 days here? If so, please stand and introduce yourself so we can welcome you. Would you care to stand?
Hi, I'm Julia.
Hi, Julia.
Welcome. Hi, I'm Corey.
Hi, Corey. Welcome. Great you're here. Anybody else? We're all glad you're here, of course. We'll get right into our subject today. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the doctor's opinion, page XXVIII, right here in this little instruction manual that I've got, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And I will say, for me, this was such a freeing thought when I came into OA 5.5 years ago that I didn't get it for another 2.5 years. I got it December of 2008. I've been absent since then. I'm at my normal body weight now. When I realized that it wasn't my fault that I had an allergy, an actual medical problem, a medical issue, that was a tremendous freeing thought in my recovery. To know that if I take that first compulsive bite, something is going to start happening in my body. And we're so thrilled to have our panelists here today. We have three esteemed speakers, long-timers in this program, and I will introduce them first, and then we'll start. Gail will begin. Our first speaker here is Gail P., a 100-pounder from Valley Village, California, which I understand is in the Valley, near Studio City. That's why they call it Valley Village. So we're so glad that she's here. She's been absent over 23 years, or almost 23 years. Next, we have Roberta, who flew in all the way from New York, from the five towns, from Cedarhurst. Is anyone from New York here? Great to see you. We don't want to have too many New Yorkers in one room. I'm from New York also, and the funny coincidence is my wife is from Cedarhurst, and Roberta's from Cedarhurst. Maybe they even grew up together. You never know. You never know. And Roberta has been in the program for a long time, over 30 years. And on the end, we have a newcomer, Harlan. I believe, Harlan, you have 24 hours of abstinence, is what I understand, right? One day at a time. Many of you heard him at lunch. Wasn't he a great speaker at lunch? Absolutely amazing. I am so lucky because I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, across the street from that gentleman, and we go to the same meetings probably 4 or 5 times a week. That's why I wasn't in the lunch meeting, because I'm sick of hearing that spiel already. But it really is a gift for me. We both can walk over there. It's right across the street where the North Scottsdale Fellowship Club is. If anyone's in Arizona, the Phoenix area, you're always welcome. You'll see Harlan over there. You'll see me over there. I know you'll probably go for Harlan. You don't care about what I have to say. But it's a miracle that he's with us in the program over there. So let's start with Gail. Gail, if you'd please come up and share your story.
Hello, I'm Gail. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a 100-pounder. Welcome. This is a wonderful birthday party. Thank you for asking me. Jackie, who's not here, but Colleen's taking her place. Thank you. Where do I start? Okay, the only relief is entire abstinence. I did not want to hear that when I came into OA. That meant I had to put down the food. But I came into OA. I just want to get the numbers out of the way. I came into OA February 20th, 1989. My abstinence date started February 21st, 1989, so I'll have 23 years of abstinence next month. And my top weight is 265. I weigh 141. I'm 5'6", so that's normal. I weigh 141, so I maintain a 124-pound weight loss. And thank God. What I am is I'm grateful that God gave me the willingness to put down the food. And I didn't have to do it alone. I did it with all of you. I didn't have to just do. I didn't have to go home and, you know, white knuckle it. I got to start working the steps. And I want to read something that came into Hazeltine today, just really quick before I even start. It says, "The catch 22 of recovery. You've got to change your thinking to change your drinking. But to change your thinking, you've got to change your drinking." So I couldn't do a rhyme, so I'm not a poet. So I have to change my eating in order to change my thinking. I couldn't do it the opposite way around. I had to stop eating compulsively. So when I first came into OA, my abstinence for the first probably 12 years, maybe 11, 12 years, was just no binging. And what I did is I went to, I'm not going to quote the big book because you guys could all read it. I don't want to do that. I want to just tell you my experience. So I went to meetings. We had a lot of fellowship, and I grew up in OA in the San Fernando Valley. I would go to meetings in West Hollywood. I have no idea why, but I would always go over the hill every day, went to maybe 9 or 10 meetings a week. I would go to fellowship before and after each meeting. I was single at the time. And I would go to meals, and I learned what a portion and what food looked like. I had no idea, because what I was doing was just hurting myself so badly with food, so I didn't have to feel. So I chose to see what other people are doing, what portions look like on a plate. I didn't like what I saw, but I tried to emulate that. So my first part of my absence, my absence over the past 22 and 11, 12, you know, a year, almost 23 years, has evolved into what it is now. My absence and my food plan more than my absence. My absence has evolved. I have let go of foods over the years that I found were harmful to me that I didn't know in the beginning, or probably wouldn't be able to let go of even if I knew they were harmful. It took a lot of step work and a lot of healing to be able to do that. So I came in, and so I did not binge, and I ate the well-balanced meals. They looked pretty large compared to what I look like, what they look like now, but that was okay. Even if I ate a whole chicken, a whole potato, a whole this, whatever it was a well-balanced meal. And what I did is I started working the steps right away. And I found out right away from step one that I am powerless over certain foods. It was all foods at the time. When I came in, it was every food. It was celery I would binge on. So I had to learn to eat what a portion looked like. And even my portions were like, because I weighed 265, so my portions were bigger than they are now, as I said. But it was a portion for a 265-pound person, trying to lose maybe 5 pounds at a time or 1 pound at a time, one day at a time. So I would do my meals. I never had the three meals, nothing in between, ever. I just never occurred to me to have that kind of abstinence. I had to have something that worked for me. And I would lose weight. I didn't weigh myself in the beginning. I have no idea how long it took me. I don't know. Now I weigh myself, but I didn't do that before. I worked the steps like my life depended on it. Meaning working the steps for me is going, we didn't have any OA books in 1989, so we had AA. We had the big book, and we had the AA 12 and 12. I went through every paragraph with a red pen. Number one, I crossed out alcohol and put food, or I crossed out plate, glass and put plate, whatever. Plate in hand is fed when you start, you know, the AA 12 and 12. Anyway, so I did that, and I literally wrote on every paragraph of the big book and every paragraph of the AA 12 and 12 in the beginning. And I did that, and I read it to my sponsor, read the next paragraph, wrote on it. Sometimes it would be one sentence at a time. And I just worked the steps all the way through. I knew I was powerless over food. I didn't know until I came into OA how powerless I was. That I didn't know. I was 240 pounds by high school, so I really didn't have I got fat. I was always fat, so I didn't know how horrible it was being fat for me. I didn't know. And I have to say right now that the worst thing I ever experienced in my life was being fat. Looking back, I thought the worst thing that I would ever have experienced is not eating, but it's just the opposite. My belief system was so skewed that I thought that I was treating myself when I would eat things that were not good for me. Oh, I'm losing my treat? I didn't realize I was losing my killing myself. That's what I was losing. I was losing killing myself, which was good. So anyway, so I worked the first step. Was the hardest thing I think I ever had done is work the first step, because being so big, I felt really powerful. And then somebody's telling me I'm powerless. That was a really horrible experience for me. I'm powerless. You're taking away my food. But I was, I don't know why. I came into OA not trying to lose weight, but trying to fit into a group of people. I didn't really know about losing weight. I just wanted to be part of something. So I felt, I didn't feel anything, to be honest with you. I can't say I felt like not a part of, because I didn't feel anything when I came in. But apparently I wanted to be part of a group. So I came in, and I didn't drink, I didn't take drugs, but I knew that I was bigger than everybody else in the room. So I have pictures. I don't know, should I pass around pictures? I don't know. I could pass around pictures. If anybody wants to see them, they could, yeah, they could see them. Anyway, so I wore a size 28 dress, and I said I weighed 265, so it was pretty ugly. Anyway, so I worked the first step, and it felt like I was in a tunnel, and there was no end to the black tunnel. I was in a train, the black tunnel, I just was no end. And I found out there is an end to the black tunnel. I just had to keep working the steps. And step two for me is God, I came to believe that God would restore me to sanity. I'm not going to talk about all the steps, just a few of them, because we don't have time for all of them. But God restored me to sanity, and I got to stop hurting myself with food. That was my first thing, because for me, it starts and ends with it starts with the food. I had to start with the food, and I had to stop hurting myself with it. But when God was started restoring me to sanity, I got to see that that's what food was doing for me. It was not a treat. It wasn't a friend. I hear that so many people say, well, that's my only friend, my only thing. Well, I found out that's not true at all. It is not my friend. It is fuel. It is to get me from one day, from one place to the other. It is not a treat. And I also, I'm going to talk about God a little bit, my journey. I was brought up saying I was Jewish, but I didn't have any religion whatsoever. And what I've come to believe is a power greater than myself is called God restored me to sanity. At first it was with the food, as I said. My food started cleaning up. The portions were big at first, like for the first 10 years or so, the portions were gigantic, pretty big. But I was losing weight. And God was restoring me to sanity the whole time as I was working the steps. And what happened was 11, 12 years into my program, I was a size 14, and I thought I was fine. You know, a size 14 was pretty good compared to a size 28. When you see the pictures, you'll see what 28 looks like. I thought I was done losing. I felt fine. But God, I guess, had other things in store for me. So I started adding foods to my abstinence at maybe 12 years of abstinence. I started putting foods on my abstinence because I found that I couldn't comfortably eat one. I could eat one, but it wasn't comfortable. So I started putting those foods on my abstinence, and then I got down to a size 6 bottom and 8 top, you know, 141 pounds. I didn't know that was what I was going to be doing. I had no idea that's what was going to happen, but that's what happened. So I've continued to work the steps. I still work the steps. I have to work the steps. I made a decision in step 3. My decision is every day I'm not going to hurt myself with food, and then it sprouted out to other things. I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm not going to hurt myself by saying mean things to people. I'm not going to hurt myself by lying, by cheating, by stealing. Everything I did when I was eating, everything I did, I'm going to tell my truth as nice as I can. I'm learning still how to do that. So I just make a decision, and here's what I do every day. I just want to talk about my daily routine. Get up in the morning, obviously. I weigh myself every day because my sponsor, who has 47 years of abstinence, she weighs herself every day. I just do because it works for her. She has what I want. I do what she does. She weighs herself every day, so I do. And then I sit at my desk. I go into my desk. I make my tea, sit at my desk, and I pray, and I connect with God, and we plan my food for the day. It's never me alone. I have made a decision to do God's will, and I have made a decision that God's will is for me not to hurt myself. I made a decision that God's will for me is to be healthy, and that leads to happiness, that leads to everything, just to eat as healthy as possible. That means that if there's a birthday party, I don't hurt myself. That means any occasion where people say, it's just this one time, never this one time for me. I never, ever, ever go off my food plan. I would never hurt myself again. Ever, ever, ever. And it's so easy by 23 years. It's just totally easy to not hurt myself. My husband and I travel the world, and I have gotten chicken and vegetables in Africa, in the bush of Africa. I've gotten it in Thailand. I've gotten it. We were just in Australia and New Zealand. Beautiful stuff there. I did not have to ever go off my food. I never have to go off my food plan. It's called a plan for a reason. I plan it. So in places I had to take care of myself, I had to do a little due diligence and call ahead. It takes 2 seconds. Being fat was a 24-hour job. I had to be fat 24/7 every day. Planning my food, maybe 5 minutes a day. I get up in the morning, God and I talk. We decide what I'm eating for the day after I see my calendar of what I have to do. And it happens. It just happens because it took me that 5 minutes to do it. God and I had an assignment when I was first new with my first sponsor. She said, once a week you're to go to lunch with a pad and paper, and God's going to be around, across the table from you, and you're going to write to God and pretend like he writes back, or talks back to you. And you're going to do that every day until you become friends with God. And that happened. I know God is unconditional love for me, you know, that I needed to get me through. It was really hard not eating. You know, it was really hard, putting the fork down. There was a lot of withdrawal, like heroin, you know, with certain foods, not all of them. But my higher power restored me to sanity so I could get through it. So I believe that God is everything. That's what it says in the big book, by the way, on page 53. I said I'm not going to quote much of the big book, but on page 53 it says, God is everything or God is nothing. What will you decide? So I made a decision that God is everything. And if God is everything, that means my thinking is not good. We're being taped, so I'm not going to say what I really think my thinking is. My thinking is not my friend. My thinking gets me in a lot of trouble. Has in the past. My thinking got me a really miserable life, you know, single. Nothing worked in my life really well. Nothing worked in my life. It was like, you know, it looked good because I could wear expensive clothes because I had a good job, but the insides were dying, you know, dying. My eyes, you could see in my eyes, I didn't have any life left in me. So I did my first fourth step after I was abstinent. I was abstinent starting in February. I did my first four step, like maybe 14 months later, because it took me a long time to do the first three steps, writing as much as I did. I had so much writing to do, you know, and I still have a lot to do. And I would do freehand writing as well as my step work every day. So I did my writing. I would read it to my sponsor, and then I did my fourth step, and that was 136 pages of resentments, 136 pages of handwritten resentments. I resented everything, every people, place, things. I resented the New York Library because of the steps I couldn't get up when I was fat. I couldn't do it because I couldn't make it up the steps. Also, you know, one thing that was really that I resented was the Santa Monica Pier, the merry-go-round. Because if there's a big sign that says if you're over 200 pounds, you can't go on it on the horses. So when I first got to 199 pounds, I went on that merry-go-round. I was so, and my friends came with me and cried. They were all so touched that I could do that, you know. So people don't understand what it's like to fill up a seat really a lot, you know, when they haven't been through that. But it was like, it really affects the life. 1 minute left, are you kidding? Okay, so I read my fourth step. It took a long time. She was very patient. And ever since then, I've just been working the steps. I am very much ensconced in my 11th step now. I go to a certain spiritual place where I really practice knowing God, knowing God's will for me in every area of my life. I'm now married over 10 years now. He met me when I was this size. So, it's, you know, I don't know if I would have, you know, if he would have been attracted to me in a bigger size. I'm not sure. I've never asked him. Especially when he probably wouldn't tell me the truth anyway. But anyway, but I just think working the steps doesn't take me that long. It took maybe 15 minutes a day at the most, you know, maybe average. But what I got to do is have a different life. And it's just a matter of, like, you know, buying a red pen for me. It was buying a red pen to mark things up and, you know, and writing in a book, in a pamphlet. And just, it was wonderful. And I didn't have to have any regrets. You know, I don't have to have any regrets. I don't have to, like, say, God, not one more day. I don't have to ever do that again. I could say, thank you, God, instead. And thank you, God, for letting me speak here today. Thank you.
Great story, Gail. I love the line, I will not hurt myself by fill in the blank. And you say that every day, right? I'm going to add that 15 times a day. 20 times a day. I will not hurt myself by wonderful. And also traveling around the world, I travel a lot too. Planning ahead is so easy. So I've even brought my food all the way to Israel. Whole wheat muffins all the way to Israel. A reminder that we have an Ask It basket going around the room. Please jot down your questions so they can be addressed by our panel during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Roberta, all the way from New York, from Cedarhurst.
Hi, I'm Roberta, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. I've been in program 32 years, and when I came in to Overeaters Anonymous, I weighed 240 pounds. I was an angry, nasty person. You really wouldn't want to know me very, very much. And I was able to lose 100 pounds in 10 months. I was given a food plan. It was called Blue Sheet at the time. And I think I'm really grateful that I came in after everybody was given gray sheet, because many of my friends who originally got that original gray sheet plan, having a lot of trouble loving themselves back to abstinence. So I'm grateful that I got that food plan. I was able to maintain a healthy body weight for 9 months, then took the first bite and started to put on the weight. I never gained back the entire 100 pounds. It's a miracle. I did work through the steps. I had done a fourth step. I did went to many meetings a week. Emotionally, I think I made a lot of changes. I started seeing a therapist. I got a much-needed divorce, and I was much happier. But I lived in that period of being abstinent for a certain period and then getting into a relapse. So I tried gray sheet. I thought maybe a stricter food plan would help me. And that worked for a short time, and then that did not work anymore. So for those 22 years, I never went to a nutritionist. It was always my food plan with the help of a sponsor or using the Dignity of Choice suggestions. And when I first came in, I wrote my food down every day. I gave it away. Now I write my food down when I want to lose weight again or when I have a problem. So my abstinence, you know, when Jackie first asked me to speak, she said, could you speak on happy, joyous, and free? And I was, oh, yeah, that's my favorite. I always write that in the We Care book. You know, that's really the way I feel. My life is just so incredibly good. And then there was some sort of a glitch, and she emailed me that this was the workshop that I was speaking at. And for some reason, that from the big book, you know, where it says the only relief is entire abstinence. So I kept thinking that that was the title of this, the only relief, entire abstinence. And I have like a difficulty in accepting abstinence as it's written, as we define it. Because for me, abstinence is sane, guilt-free, peaceful living, giving me freedom to live a life that's really fantastic. So 10 years ago, I was sick of relapsing and, you know, just kind of never getting it. I was kind of maintaining, you know, about 175 pounds. It wasn't really maintenance, but that's what I was doing. But it wasn't a smooth one day after another abstinence. So I realized that I really have to get the spiritual piece. That was the puzzle piece that was missing. I got a God of my understanding. I started really nurturing this God, going to a spiritual advisor. At that point, my son had become Orthodox. We're Jewish, and he had become a rabbi. He moved to Israel. I thought, well, maybe I needed a religious God. And, you know, I was always seeking a higher power in my life. I went to many meditations, transcendental meditation, tried smoking pot. I was just always looking for the answer out there, you know, how to get more spiritual. And so I had a rabbi come in and kosher my house and this, that, and the other thing, and maybe my OA God wasn't good enough. So I went through that period, you know, before 2002, when finally I said, you know, I need to get a God that's my God, not anybody else's. And I got a very spiritual woman to help me define my higher power, give him the attributes I want. And that was a turning point for me, because my abstinence just became very easy after that. You know, I eat healthy. I can't tell you specifically I eat three meals a day, I eat two snacks, because it varies from day to day. I live my life, and my food may be more on one day than it is on the other day and less, but I am refraining from compulsive eating. So I write my food down, and I don't share it with anybody. I give it to God. There are many things that I do when I saw actions of abstinence. So I was thinking, well, one of the things I do is I've started to exercise in my life. I go to yoga. I want to, you know, be stronger and have more flexibility and more balance. In fact, one of my friends who's a I don't pick up no matter what guy, and I'm always saying, well, I have a flexible food plan. For my 70th birthday, he gave me a T-shirt that says Flexible 70. So it was really nice, and I think that, you know, my walking, I heard it advertised that a pedometer is a very helpful tool, because if you make 10,000 steps a day, so I need these little motivations. So I went out, I got myself one, and I that's my goal. I walk 10,000 steps a day, and most days I do it. So for me, one of the actions of abstinence is to have some exercise in my life. I also keep my fridge stocked with healthy foods. I don't bring in foods that are going to tempt me. It's very easy for me to stay away from foods that I know I don't eat. But there are some foods that are kind of on the fence, and if I bring them into my house, I have that tug of war from day to day. So I do a lot of praying. I ask God every morning to give me the willingness and the ability to stay abstinent for the day. I made one of the rooms in my house a little meditation room, so I know, because I'm a negative person. I wake up and I need to get to at least sea level so I can go on and have a good day. So I took out books on meditation, and I just sit, and it could be one practice one day, another practice another day, but I just sit and connect with God in the morning. And you taught me how to talk to God through the day and to pray to God, and I do that. And my intuition is part of that. You know, the pages in the big book from 86 to 88 are really helpful. I've chosen a food plan that feels livable. For some, you know, for many years, I didn't eat certain foods. And several years ago, it just, the obsession was totally lifted. And today, I can tell you honestly, I can eat anything. I don't eat everything every day, but I can eat anything. If I go to a particular place, I don't know. I don't have any restrictions. I guess the key for me is that I never think that it's mine. If I'm having a piece of cake, let's say, for dessert, I'll take one or two forkfuls, and for today, I can say that's it, and it doesn't set me off. I don't know what happened. There was some sort of a shift. And God has totally relieved that, you know, that need to finish the bag or finish the box. I can be happy with one today. I really focus. I feel that all, you know, if my food is clean and my resentments are taken care of every night with the 10th step, I am living in the sunlight of the Spirit. That's where I want to live. That's where I want to be. I don't want to have to hold on to anything so tightly that, you know, that it would upset me and I'd have to go back to day one and start my abstinence again. That is one of the big changes. I've learned not to punish myself. My friend also uses that phrase, I will not hurt myself with food today. I love the idea of treating myself with love instead of with punishment. That has been a major shift in my abstinence. If my day wasn't as clean as I'd like it to be, I do a 10-step at night, and I know that tomorrow is going to be a better day. I've taken to, with my OA friends, we've started reading other literature. I belong to a book club. I go to many meetings a week. I give a lot of service. I live in Nassau County, and other than Los Angeles, where I'm really taken away by the many meetings, where I'm living right now, I mean, there must be 25 meetings a week within 10 minutes. Now, I live in Nassau County on Long Island in New York, and we have about 40 meetings a week. But I'm driving 40, 50 minutes sometimes to some of those meetings. So it's been a pleasure. I'm here for 2 months this year, not missing the New York weather at all, and just thrilled with the amount of recovery I see and the amount of young people and more men in the rooms. It's just very vibrant area. So giving a lot of service is something that keeps me abstinent. I did service first on the group level and then on the intergroup level and then, you know, region and world service. And the more service I give, I'm busy on the computer writing to people and, you know, developing more relationships. The fellowship is certainly helpful. But everything that I do helps me so much with my abstinence because there's a sense of, you know, I want to keep this life. I don't want to trade it in for, a stupid, bag of Twinkies or anything. You know, I don't want to do that. God has absolutely, you know, I can't say enough. I think it's synonymous. You know, the only relief is relying, turning it over, relying on the higher power, and then the rest is just absolutely, I just feel like I'm living in the penthouse. You know, for so many years I did this program, and I got out of the gutter, and I was on the sidewalk, and that was great, but now I am definitely in the penthouse. Life is so good. The promises have come true. I took a risk. I never had left my house for 2 months. We, you know, closed up the house, and it was scary. And I, it's just the more that you keep your food clean, the more you can enjoy life. Life to the fullest. I do things now that I never thought that I would be doing. I'm happy. I'm free. You know, it's kind of almost like, any time that I decided to give something up, it was a freedom. I thought it was going to be a loss when I surrender. But once I surrendered my total will and life over to God's care, He's taking care of me. I can't believe that I can look like a normal person out there, that I can eat anything like a normal person. It's almost like a charade. I feel, who is this person? But for me, the key is just keeping it honest. If I know that something is starting to give me trouble, I don't eat it at all. It changes. Your food plan changes, but my commitment to abstinence is there. For me, it's sane, guilt-free, joyful, peaceful living. Thanks for letting me share.
Those are beautiful goals. Sane, guilt-free, peaceful living. Living in the sunlight of the Spirit. Very nice. And you do get some sunlight there in New York, is that true? But it comes from my higher power, too. Next is Harlan, my good friend Harlan, from the north side of Chicago. and you gave a beautiful talk at lunch today. One of the things I will mention, just a personal note, actions of abstinence, one of my actions of abstinence is attending Harlan's informal big book study every Saturday morning in North Scottsdale at the coffee plantation from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And if anybody is visiting Arizona, be sure to show up at the coffee plantation 10 a.m. Saturday mornings. Is that an open invitation, Harlan? It's been vital in my recovery. Harlan?
Oh, how do you follow that? I'm Harlan. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I could stand up here and tell you that I recorded a weight of 513 and went into 700 pounds, and I've lost a little over 500 pounds, and I've got 13 years of abstinence, but it's not really interesting. And all that's true. It's all true. I've been in the program 33 years. I have 13 years of abstinence, clean, lost 500 pounds. Is that really so important about action of abstinence, is what I eat and what I don't eat? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It has nothing to do with anything. What it has to do with is causes and conditions. Getting down to why I ate. Getting down to the steps. The only action I have to take today is the steps. All of them, every day, constantly. Because I can't just work them in the morning or at night. I work them all day. Because as a human being, things are going to happen. And if you're sitting in your chair wondering, what is this guy talking about? What I had to do was I had to come to a conclusion, and I just talked about this a little bit ago, that food was killing me and I was going to waste the one life I had. And there are worse things than death. There is the torture and the hell of the food. I wouldn't wish this on anyone. And if I did to you what this illness did to me, I'd be in prison for a long time. I looked around as a 335-pound senior in high school. And I looked around as a 500-pound man, and I looked around as a 700-pound man with an 80-inch waist, and I wondered, what prenatal crime had I committed? What was wrong with me? Why could I not have the relationship with food that others seemed to just fall into? Why was it that I thought about food differently? Why was it that I reacted to the food differently? My friends didn't desire the food like I did. They didn't eat like I did. Why did I? Why was it so important to me? Why did I want to test power tools on them when they would pick up something and say, oh, it's too sweet. Oh, it's so rich. Why? Why? Why could they so easily fend off these things? They fell into girls. They fell into abstinence and thin bodies. And I couldn't manage to do that. And the biggest thing that had to happen in my life is probably the biggest thing that's going to happen in your life. I had to come to a jumping off point. I had to come to a bottom. All I ever wanted to be was thin, and all I wanted to do was eat. And that was not working for me. And the food was wreaking havoc on my life, and it was wreaking havoc in the lives of those around me. Page 18. An illness of this sort, and we believe it, an illness affects people's lives as no other illness can. If a person had cancer, all would feel sorry for him. But not so with the compulsive overeating illness. For with it goes the annihilation of things normal. It brings about fierce resentment, misunderstanding, to say the least. People ask me questions that I did not have an answer to. Why are you eating Butterfinger bars when you're already so fat? I didn't really know, so I made up lies. Why don't you go on a diet? Girls don't like fat boys. Oh, I found that out. Don't eat so much, you'll feel better. They were right. When I was not eating so much, hunkered down in unaided dieting, using my willpower to fend off these thoughts going through my head, I felt better. I felt anger better. I felt fear better. I felt jealousy, crushes on girls, inadequacies. I felt these things better. And as these feelings would burst to the surface in my heart and in my soul, there was one thing I knew. Screw it, I'm just going to eat. I didn't know why. And I had to come to a bottom, and the bottom was this. I had to fear more eating more than I feared giving up the food. And if you're not there yet, it may not be your time, but that was where I had to be. I was so afraid of giving up the food. I was so afraid of giving up what my lover, my friend, my companion was the food, and I didn't want to give it up, and what would my life look like sans the food? Hence the chapter, A Vision for You. Because the big book answers that question of what will my life look like? What if I can't order that pizza? What if I can't eat such and such on such and such an occasion? What will my life look like and how will I make it? And I wasn't ready to surrender, but I had to fear the food more than I feared giving it up or nothing would happen. And I have to work the steps out of the big book of AA every day, all day. And I had to have a relationship with God, and I had to have an understanding of the fatal nature of this illness. This illness is fatal. I kept showing up to a nuclear war with a stick, hoping against hope that today I could fend off on my willpower that thought that I want to eat Raisinets. I didn't even care if they were showing a movie or not. I didn't care if the projector was broken. Get me the Raisinets. Give me a little popcorn for my butter, and I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to roll. And I didn't understand that the thought that I want to eat Raisinets or I want to eat whatever, French fries, came from someplace, and that I was treating that thought, thinking that food and weight and that thought were the problem, and they're not. I was treating a symptom and I wasn't getting to causes and conditions. And the causes and the conditions are the mental obsession, which caused me to eat to make myself feel better, and the physical allergy or the craving, which made it impossible for me to stop. Now, the big book doesn't call it an obsession. The big book says strange mental twist. In other areas, it calls it a peculiar mental twist. Call it what you will, I'm absolutely out of my mind. This is a form of insanity. Now, I cannot willpower the thought away that I want to eat Raisinets. I've tried. I have a college degree. I read the first step. We were fat slobs and Harlan can't stay on his diet. That's what I thought it said. What I came to understand is that what the problem was is that I had no understanding of any of it and I had to take certain actions. And I had to understand that there's nothing I can do about the physical allergy, that craving that sets me apart from the normal. Allergy was a word that I didn't understand. I thought that if I had an allergy, I said, that's crazy. I don't break out in hives or sneeze or itch. No, it means an abnormal, adverse reaction to the food, beverage, or substance. But it says the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. Temporarily, by working the steps and giving God my selfishness, my self-seeking, my dishonesty, anger, and fear in the steps 4 through 12, I can temporarily dismantle the strange mental twist. I sought food to feel better. When I work the steps, I already feel better, and I no longer have the thought of the food. The reward in OA for me is not that I have not compulsively overeaten in 13 years and have lost 500 pounds. The reward is I don't want to compulsively overeat. And as a result, I've lost the weight. The food thought doesn't take root in my heart because I have steps. I love a good resentment. Why? Because when I get good and mad, I can abdicate responsibility for my life, blame you, and eat a mastodon, blame it on you, and it was your fault in the first place. That's the reward for a resentment. I love it. I have to have a relationship with God to work the steps. The thesis line in the book on page 45. The main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. The God of my childhood wouldn't have kept me out of the food for 6 seconds. I was presented in Hebrew school with a punishing God, a vengeful God that did not like me one bit. I swore, I yelled F you at my mother, I rode my bike when I shouldn't have, I was doomed. I have to have a God today that is not that God. I have to have a God that I assign characteristics and traits to that do work in my life, that I do believe in and I can love. Now there are theologians and there are philosophers and historians and educators whose life's vocation is to determine who God is or philosophize about who God is and who God is not. There are two things I need to know about God today. There is one, and it's not me. And if I know those two things and I work the steps, I don't want the food. It is a non-issue for me. I don't want it. I recoil as if from a hot flame. So for me, the action of abstinence is work the steps. Now, that said, I cannot work them if I'm drunk on food. I have to plug the jug. I have to take the action of having a food plan and being on it. And abstinence for me is, am I at or approaching a normal body weight? If I'm not, I'm not abstinent. And so I have to take that action. I have to work the steps. The food becomes a non-issue and the weight came off. So that is the most important thing I can do today. Work the steps. Did I say that enough times while I was up here? Work the steps. If I'm going to diet with group support, if you're in this audience and you're thinking that you're going to hear something up here where you're going to be good today instead of bad, you're not going to eat that way anymore and you're not working the steps and you are a compulsive overeater, you're doomed. If you're not, you might be okay. There's people in OA meetings that are non-compulsive overeaters, zillions of them. But if you are a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety, and you're not working the steps, it's not if you're going to return to the food, it's just when. And when you do, it won't be pretty. Many of you have graduated before, and you've heard the graduation song, "Welcome to McDonald's, can I take your order, please?" And the graduate resoundingly responds, "Yes, and a supersized fries and a chocolate shake and a pie." And that's the ceremony, right? And then they hand you your bag of graduation, and you're graduated. So this is the greatest way of life there is in the world. There is more to it than just a cessation of compulsive overeating. There is what you see around you, the fellowship. There are the miracles that God will make possible in your life. But it must have a starting point. It must have a point of origin that somewhere in your mind says, as it says on page 58, which I refer to as step zero. It's not really step zero, but that's how I refer to it. If you want what we have, and you are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. In order for you to really want what we have, if you're anything like me, you must put down the food and pick up the big book. Put down the food and pick up the big book. I'm very honored to be here. This is the greatest way of life there is. And I'll close with just quoting Roseanne's title of her book. I love closing with this. So this is the greatest way of life in the world. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you'll be amazed at what will happen before you're halfway through. This is a wonderful thing we have here. Please become a part of it and you will see miracles, as Roseanne uses as the title of her book, Beyond Your Wildest Dreams. Keep coming back.
Thank you, Harry. We have about 15 or 20 minutes left, and we're going to do the Ask It Basket. And Harlan, you drill into my head multiple times a week since we go to the same meeting in Scottsdale. Action of abstinence, work the steps. And one other quote, which I always plagiarize from Harlan: this is not a program for those that need it, not a program for those that want it. It's a program for those that
do it.
Do it, what Harlan said. Just do it. Questions from the audience, and what I'll do is I'll read the question, and then the panelist will come up to the mic because we are recording it. First question is, what's the difference between a slip and a relapse? Who would like to answer that question? Gail, looks like you're ready. Come on up. What's the difference between a slip and a relapse?
My abstinence is black and white. If I eat something that's on my abstinence, I break my abstinence. I have not done that in all these years. So there's no difference as far as I'm concerned. If I eat something that was on my abstinence, I abstain from things. That's what it's called, my abstinence. So I don't eat it no matter what. So I've never relapsed because I've never had to do that. But other people may disagree. But in AA, if you, which our program is patterned after, if you drink, you're not sober. You don't take a cake for being sober if you drink an alcoholic drink. So if I eat something that's on my abstinence, I'm no longer abstinent.
Whoever wrote that question, does that answer the question, I hope? Next question from our audience: is abstinence a state of mind, or is it abstaining from certain foods and eating behaviors? Is abstinence a state of mind, or is it abstaining from certain foods and eating behaviors? Roberta?
Well, I definitely go with the state of mind, because as I said, there are so many different food plans, and for me, I just know that I can eat whatever intuitively I feel okay with. You know, if I'm emotionally, I must have it, well, then that's not okay. But if I can have it or not have it, and I'm in that state of grace, then it's fine to have it. So for me, it's definitely, a state of mind. And I just want to comment, because for me, a lot of times a sponsor will say, did I slip? Did I lose my abstinence? And I always try to say, well, you know, that's really up to you. And this morning I heard of the workshop and I thought that was helpful. She doesn't say when she eats too much at a meal or something like that, she won't decide if she's abstinent, if she broke her abstinence until 3 months after the fact. And I think that's really very good. because, you know, if you're going out and having a full-scale binge, that's one thing. Then you know you certainly broke your abstinence. But if you ate too much or you ate something that you don't usually eat, for me, it is different, a slip and a relapse.
Thank you, Roberta. And I know for me, fortunately, I haven't had a relapse. I've been abstinent for a little over 3 years. But I know for me, relapse would start before the food goes into my mouth, well before the food goes into my mouth. An example was about a couple of weeks ago, I started thinking compulsively about sliced almonds from Costco. We all have Costco here, right? You have to buy a 25-gallon drum of sliced almonds. I figured that's enough for one salad or two. I was still weighing and measuring it, but I was thinking in advance, tomorrow's lunch, the next lunch, whatever, about these sliced almonds. That was a warning sign for me. I'm thinking compulsively about this food. What's going on? And so before the excess almonds went into my mouth, I've eliminated that from my food plan. The next question, which specific foods are on your abstinent list? We hear that a lot. Which specific foods are on your abstinent list? Everybody has a different food plan. We have dignity of choice in OA, right? We've heard of that. Who would like to address that issue from our panel? Which specific foods are on your abstinence list? Everyone has their own individual plan, right? Our panelists agree. See your nutritionist or medical professional. Next question. If you had a messy day with food, had a bit too much, how do you get willing to exercise? Interesting question. If you had a messy day with food, had a bit too much, how do you get willing to exercise? Dale, you do yoga, right? So do I. I know a lot about you already. Would you like to answer the question?
So, when I plan my day with God in the morning, when I get up after I pee and weigh myself, I sit there and I also have a calendar that I've never had before abstinence. I never had a calendar. On my calendar are the days I exercise, and it's non-negotiable, unless I'm physically, have a cold or the flu. I do it. I just exercise. I try to, I count calories. I count how much I eat so I don't hurt myself with food. If I overeat, that's hurting myself with food, so I try not to do that. I don't do that. But I just exercise like I do anything else. I put it on my calendar. I go to the gym or I go to yoga. I'll be 60 in 2 weeks. And I do yoga, I spin, I do Pilates, and I do it 5 days a week. And I just do it because that's a way not to hurt myself. It's a way to nurture myself. So that's what I do. So I go in the morning because I don't have any energy at 60 in the afternoon. So I go in the morning before I lose my energy, and I just go and do it. It's the same thing as working the steps. I do it because that's what I do. It's good for me.
Thank you very much, Gail. I do yoga too. We could always tell, who does yoga. How many people in the audience do or have tried yoga? Isn't it absolutely amazing? 3 days a week I do yoga. I never would have believed as a guy I would do yoga. By the way, it's a shame I'm married, but it would be a great place to meet women. OA and yoga would be my perfect life. Next question. How do you do the 12 steps now after all these years in the program? Do you do it daily or weekly? If that's not a setup type of question, I don't know what is. How do you do the 12 steps now after all these years in the program, daily or weekly? Who would like to respond to that? Roberta.
You live the steps. It's not like you do them. Every day, as I go through the day, if I see that I'm in a nasty mood at the supermarket and I'm getting impatient with the clerk and I'm like, why doesn't she do it this way and she's taking so much time, you intuitively, I don't want to act that way. I don't want to feel that way. So I'll say, I'll change my attitude. So I'm doing a 10-step as I go through the day. If I hurt your feelings, if I see that I did something wrong, I yelled at my husband for something, or I was impatient, I just immediately change my attitude. I apologize when necessary. So you're working your ninth step all day long. You know, your prayer and meditation is all day long, so that's, you know, it takes into account. So it's not like you sit down and you work the step. And sometimes, you know, like a fourth step, if you want to, for me, I don't ever do another fourth step. Because if you haven't gotten back into the food, if you just clean up each day and you can use the columns, you know, what am I resentful at? If I'm still carrying resentment at the end of the day. Right now, my husband and myself and his sister are living together. And I started getting a resentment the other day because his sister is a little older and I'm preparing the dinner and then I'm doing the dishes and the two of them sat down and started watching TV. So I knew that I'm not going to do that again. If that comes up again, I'm going to just leave the dishes in the sink. So that's how working the steps is. You're just constantly doing and living in them. You know, I love that our book says, you know, we don't carry the message, we are the message. And the message is the steps.
We have a few extra minutes. If you do have questions now, you can still put them in the Ask a Pastor. Just bring it up to the table, by the way. Next question is, how do you all define your higher power? And have you experienced your higher power helping you to stop compulsively eating? If possible, give a specific example. Again, how do you all define your higher power? And have you experienced your higher power helping you to stop eating compulsively? If possible, give a specific example. Harlan, it's your turn.
My higher power and I have a very personal relationship, and it's a very ongoing, ever-changing relationship. The God that I need today is very different than the God that I needed 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago, 6 years ago, 20 years ago. Things happen. No matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, I'm going to experience disappointments, elation, fear, anger, selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty. I'm going to experience different things. And the defects of character which will kill me are those: selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, anger, and fear. I can no more will away my defects of character than I could will away the fact that today is Saturday or that I'm a compulsive overeater. So God has to help me because I cannot do these things myself. But God will not do what I can do. And what I can do is work the steps. But things happen. In the last year and a half, I got divorced. I'm living as a single man again. That's very new. I was married a long time. I was married 17 and a half, almost 18 years. And I live alone now. And I have seen, like many people have, a decline in my business income. These are things that God keeps me from getting destroyed by. And when I say destroyed, I mean succumb to the defects, not the things. Nothing is good or bad. Only my thinking makes it so. There is nothing bad today. There are only things my ego just doesn't want to hear. And because God is the only force in the universe larger and more powerful in me than my ego, I must have God in my life in a very constant but loving way. God makes things possible for me all the time that I could never have done for myself. Look around you. Look at the room we're in. Look at the panel up here and look at the program in the blue book on the table. That's Freudian, my table, right? I have a God in my life today that holds my hand when I'm scared and gives me a little patch on the tuchus, which is a little pat on the tush when I need to move a little faster. And in the final analysis, sometimes the kindest and most loving thing God can do for me is say, no, Harlan, I've got a better idea. And I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. Can I have her? No. Can I have it? No. I've got something better for you. Just wait. Just be patient. Be still, for I am God. I'll take care of it. But I just want what I want. I want it now, or I want everybody dead. So the bottom, burn the village. Burn the village. So God is a loving, ever-changing force of my life, and He is with me constantly. As we just heard, I work 10 steps all day long. 10th step is on page 84. Continue to watch for selfishness, self-seeking, fear, anger, and dishonesty, resentment and dishonesty. When these things crop up, not if, when these things crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Now, I learned a long time ago, assume that it has been removed, because God always does His end. I ask God to remove it. I discuss it with another person at once, many times Greg. I make amends quickly if I've harmed anybody. And I turn my thoughts to someone I can help. If I'm going to sit sick in self, I'm going to die in the food. I must help others. It says on page 77, my main purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service. That's an old Oxford group term, maximum service, to God and the people about me. In another part of the book, it says service to others is the foundation of my recovery. In another part of the book, it says Bill found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. What's the theme here? What's God trying to tell me? Get out of Harlan. Get out of poor me. Get out of me, me, me. On page 63, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to others. I lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, I am reborn. And that's God. Okay.
We are just about out of time. I have one quick question. First, I want a favor from everybody. Everybody raise your hand. Everybody raise your hand. Every single person. And keep your hand up when I ask this question. Keep your hand up when I ask this question. How many of you have taken an action of abstinence today? You all have, because you're sitting in this seat right now. Congratulations. In closing, no one here is a spokesperson for OA. Everyone here spoke only for themselves. Thank you all for joining us, and please join me in thanking our panel, Gail, Roberta, Harlan, for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Let's all stand, join hands, and say the Serenity Prayer one more time. And please pass Gail's picture book back to the front. It's that red picture book.
Who has it? The picture book.